welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. Happy New Year to all my listeners. Today is a special, a New Year's Eve special. Those who follow the program know that I'm on live Monday and Tuesday, and this is our new time, 1 hour earlier than before. Instead of a two-hour program on Monday, it's 1 hour Monday and Tuesday, with archive repeats the rest of the week. But it gives me some flexibility to add a special program like this, and this was an important one to add. My guest is Elaine Whitfield Sharp, and Elaine is the lawyer representing political prisoner Afia Siddiqui. I wrote about Afia. I wrote an article about how she was abducted. She's been tortured for over 4 years and reportedly raped. That needs to be confirmed. But my own feeling is there's a very strong possibility that happened because it's a very common occurrence against men and women. Most of the prisoners are men, but there are some women that end up in prisons I call U.S. torture prisons. Afia was sent to Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan and apparently there for over 4 years. Pakistani security forces abducted her, turned her over to U.S. forces, and they've had her ever since. At first, they denied that they had her. Finally, they had to admit it. Her humanity has been destroyed. It's a terrible, terrible story. Unfortunately, it's only one of many. But her story was so horrific that as I began to discover the details, I knew I had to write about her, and I wrote a very long article. Elaine, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Stephen, and Happy New Year to all of your listeners.
Oh, thank you, Elaine. We have four commercial breaks. Let me just alert you. And when you hear soft music coming on, a break is coming and I'll interrupt and so on. Can I just begin by reading the accusations against Afia in the U.S. media, none of which showed up in the charges against her. But
that's
the media, as they usually do, they just vilified her, at least for a while. And they accused, this was a very ordinary woman. She did absolutely nothing. She's innocent of all the charges against her. But yet the media ran stories that she was a Mata Hari. She was Al-Qaeda woman. She possessed information involving radiological, chemical, biological materials, other documents about a mass casualty attack, targets selected, the Brooklyn Bridge, the Empire State Building, Wall Street, Statue of Liberty, involved in terrorist recruiting. Documents about U.S. military assets using it's ludicrous. It's bad fiction, Elaine. Using reconnaissance drones, underwater bombs, gliders. Imagine these stories about this poor woman in the media, and none of this appeared in any of the charges against her.
That's right.
Let me let
you
jump in before the quick break coming.
I'm sorry, Stephen. I didn't hear that.
No, we have a break in a minute or so, but I just want to let you jump in momentarily.
Well, yes. I mean, to begin the story of Afia Siddiqui and where we are today, to really paint the picture, to give a full picture of what's going on, I think it's important to understand who Afia is as a woman, who she is as a human being. You know, this was a young woman who's very bright and one would really not be amiss in saying brilliant young woman who came to the United States to study, and she went to the University of Houston for a year, and she did so well at the University of Houston, she transferred up to the internationally renowned MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology in Boston.
Elaine, let me interrupt because they're going to cut us off. I'll let you pick up as soon as we come back from break.
Sure, absolutely.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. I'm on with Elaine Whitfield Sharp. We're talking about the case of Afia Siddiqui. Elaine, let me let you continue. Sorry that I had to interrupt.
No, none at all. Well, you know, the picture of Afia is important to understand. She's a very normal person, and you know, this is in contrast to the image of her as the Mata Hari of Al Qaeda, as you quoted from the press. the big catch, the biggest catch in terrorism circles, you know, in years, perhaps since Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. You know, she is not the person that she's painted to be in the media. Let me tell you a little bit about who she is and what her background is. And I know this from representing her family in the media and also representing her mother, Ismet, for more than 5 years now, and also having met with Afia personally. First of all, she's a very gentle person, very religious, focused on her faith and her spirituality. She's contemplative, peaceful, and the idea that she would, you know, pick up a gun and try to shoot somebody is totally abhorrent to all that I believe she is. She's a mother of three children. I was beginning to tell you a little bit before the break, and let me continue that, about her background educationally. She did come from Pakistan and went to study at the University of Houston. She did so well at the University of Houston that she transferred to the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, in Boston, where she studied biology, and that was her undergraduate degree. Not, by the way, in neurological or bio-neurological chemicals to create chemical weapons to cause neurological damage, as she has been painted from time to time in press. She did an MIT in biology, she did her undergraduate in biology at MIT, and then she did her graduate work at Brandeis University, where she studied. She was in the neuroscience department, and her degree, her PhD, her doctorate, was not in, again, neurobiological chemicals and the sorts of chemicals that could be used to inflict damage on other human beings. Indeed, it was quite the reverse. Her PhD was in an educational area. She had a hypothesis, as everybody does who has a PhD thesis. She had a hypothesis that children, in particular children, learn better by being shown how to do something rather than being told how to do something. That seems like a simple idea. Do you learn how to tie your shoe best by being told how to tie your shoe, or do you learn how to tie your shoe by being shown how to tie your shoe? It's the difference between telling and showing. And this is a very important point to establish, or was at the time, because, of course, children with learning disabilities have to be handled and approached very differently. But even if you don't have a learning disability, you can understand that, you know, being shown how to tie your shoe versus being told how to tie your shoe is more effective. And that was essentially what Afia Siddiqui's doctoral thesis was on. It was to establish that point. At no time did she have any access to any neurobiological chemicals. And in fact, the lab, quote-unquote lab, that she worked in was a computer lab and had no license whatsoever from the EPA to have any any biological chemicals. So she was, that was her background. That was her educational background. And I just want to clear that up for your readers, because since about, June or July of 2003, serious misrepresentations have been made about Afia Siddiqui in the media from unnamed sources, government sources, that she was somehow involved in neurochemicals. And this was just completely false, but it did indeed help to paint the picture of Afia as the Matahari of Al-Qaeda. Now,
in other words, Elaine, her educational background had no more relation to radiological or biological or any other kind of weaponry than somebody with a doctorate in English literature.
None whatsoever.
But yet they accused her of all those things. This comes from the FBI, from the Justice Department, And they put it in the media, and the media is very subservient. They spread all the lies. I must say, in all of the people, I've written about half a dozen or more other cases like Afia, Elaine.
Yes.
And in every case, the people were very normal. They led normal lives, but there was something about them that got the authorities to target them. I mean, why would authorities pick out a normal human being and decide we're going to call them a terrorist and we're going to go after them, we're going to paint this hideous story, all lies, but we're going to convince people it's true? There's something about who they are and what they do that makes it happen. Number one, their faith and ethnicity. You don't see this happen to too many Christian people in the war, victims of the war on terror. It almost always... certainly most of the time, it happens to people of the Islamic faith, not by coincidence, by design. Their other activities, or whatever else there is about them, their involvement in charitable activities. I wrote a story about the Holy Land Charity Foundation, a glorious organization, about four or five men who were convicted and sentenced to long prison terms. They'll appeal. Because of what they did, they raised millions of dollars for such things as education, medical supplies, all kinds of benevolent activities, and we call this terrorism, Elaine, absolutely outrageous.
Well, it is true that Afia certainly was true to her faith, in that she tried to help whoever she could. And when she was a student, Afia did help to raise money for, as I understand it, for widows and orphans in Bosnia. But that was benign charitable work. I mean, there but for the grace of God go you or I, Stephen. You know, I've given money to save the children. I've given money to all sorts of organizations that are connected in with my own Christian faith. And so too did Afia. She gave money and raised money. I don't know if she gave it, but she certainly helped to raise money for charitable causes. Is it going to be the case in 20 years or 10 years from now that somebody hijacks Save the Children for a nefarious cause? That I'm going to be accused of funding terrorism. You know, the question has to be, what was given and when was it given, and did a person understand why money was being given and what purpose it was being used for?
Elaine, absolutely. If Save the Children happens to save some children in Gaza, does that mean that Save the Children is affiliated with Hamas?
Right.
The State Department designates Hamas a foreign terrorist organization.
Mm-hmm.
It absolutely is not.
One of the things that's happened with Afia's case, and I'm sure you've seen it with other cases too, is that whenever the criminal justice system becomes politicized, you have the painting of the person through vague accusations and half-truths. We've had Afia has been accused of funding a diamond deal in Liberia. Well, we know that she was running a play group in Back Bay in Boston during that time. But there's an allegation out there in the press that she, helped to broker this $19 million diamond deal prior to 9/11. To fund that horrendous attack on the U.S., something that would be antithetical to her belief system, as I understand it. But there it is; it's out there in the media. It's a smear campaign. She was living in an apartment complex where money was transferred from Saudi Arabia. This triggered a suspicious activity report, a so-called SARSR report. And it was later found to be that this was money transferred by the Saudis to a Saudi Arabian citizen who was having medical treatment. It was to pay for medical treatment at a nearby hospital. But before that was established to be the case, the media had already reported through a network of unidentified anonymous sources that Althea Siddiqui, you know, had lived in this apartment complex and this money had been transferred to her apartment complex, as though to suggest that she was involved, you know, as being the fixer, the main person who fixed the funding for 9/11. The smear was out there. The diamond deal smear was out there. The transfer of money was out there. You know, we've had the smear about the post office box in Baltimore that she opened up a P.O. box, you know, to help fund other terrorist activities. And, you know, it goes on and on and on. And you have to sort of start peeling the onion back layer by layer to get to the bottom when you find absolutely there's nothing there. You know, this is a woman with three children, highly educated, hardly the person, I might add, who might feel the need to spend her life being a terrorist. She had more going for her. She wasn't a loser. I hear music playing. Does that mean that we're on break?
You're going to cut in for another break. Let's take
that
break and we'll continue the story.
All right.
Steve Lindman. I'm on with Elaine Whitfield Shop. Elaine, let me just make one comment. Number one, listeners to my program are far more knowledgeable than the average listener who gets his or her news from CNN, Fox News, whatever. For the few who may not, it's important to really highlight the fact that since the Bush administration declared a war on terror, that war needs victims to prove to the public that there really are bad guys out there, quote-unquote, and your government is on the job, and they're finding these bad guys, and they're prosecuting them, and they're putting them away doing hard time in prisons to keep the country safe. It turns out that the government are the bad guys, and the people they go after are the victims of the bad guys. But the idea is to stoke fear, because when people are scared, after 9/11, the level of fear just went off the charts. So you need to point fingers and make accusations and then show the public that you're going after these bad people to protect the national security. Of course, what happens besides going after innocent people is the national security becomes diminished. We have a lot less of it now than we did before the 9/11 attacks. And the 9/11 attacks alone were very suspect. But
I appreciate the point that you're making, and along those lines, I will say this, that, you know, in many people who have a spiritual belief system will see this as a sort of a universal power struggle, that you've got this human being who's done her best in all her life to help others. She's really gone out of her way to help others. She hasn't just, you know, been a loyal taxpayer to the U.S. She hasn't just, you know, had three children and been a great mother. She hasn't just worked really hard in her, you know, in her mosque and her religious community to help others and reach out beyond her own community. You know, this is a woman who has always done her best to be a good Muslim, to be faithful to her faith. She's not, it's hard for me to understand sometimes how human beings can hate and use each other as much as they do. But whenever you have, you know, the politicization of the criminal justice system, unfortunately, you know, we do have to have, according to the world order, if you will, sacrificial lambs. And I see Althea as one of those victims, you know, but it is a spiritual universal struggle between good and evil in many ways. It isn't just politics. Politics is the weapon. Politics is the medium through which this person is victimized. Does this make sense?
Oh, absolutely, and it's bipartisan, Elaine. I honestly see no change once the Obama administration takes over. The war on terror will continue. They may very well close down Guantanamo, but that's a meaningless gesture because the U.S. has what I call torture prisons around the world, including those in other countries like Syria, Jordan, whatever, Eastern Europe, that they go along with our dirty business, and we secretly rendition prisoners to people, prisoners with no names. They only have numbers, and Afia was known as Prisoner 650 at Bagram Air Force Base, and prisoners referred to her as the Gray Lady of, of Bagram, and they heard her screams for over 4 years. You may know that story, Elaine. And the
I do. And I just let me put my lawyer hat on with you for a moment, because I'm a lawyer, and I make no apologies for that. You know, in this day and age, but I am a lawyer, so let's put the lawyer thinking cap on together. And remember that in this world, in this time, the only things that we can know, technically speaking, are those things that we can prove in court. And so there are many allegations out there, you know, in the media and in various books and websites. You know, only those things that we can prove are the things that I think we can take to the bank. I think we can know instinctively, perhaps even on a spiritual level, what's been going on and what the true forces are at work here. But the things that we have to deal with in the concrete here and now are those things that we can prove in court. And you opened your program for your listeners by bringing up the fact that Afia hasn't been charged with any acts of terrorism. And there's been no indictment for her for these alleged acts of terrorism. She's been charged with assaulting, you know, some U.S. Personnel with a rifle, an assault rifle. That's what she's charged with, and that's all.
We're coming right up on another break now. When we come back from break, we need to explain to listeners what she was charged with. Absolutely absurd. But let me make one comment. As far as torture going on at U.S. prisons, what we do know and can prove is what victims have told. Victims lucky enough to have gotten out and told the stories of what was done to them. And it's not one victim. It's a fair number of them. And the stories are very similar. They pretty much ratify each other's stories. And they're horrific accounts. So, you know,
no doubt. No, I mean, and I believe them.
Oh, absolutely true. And I've written in some detail about this. Just harrowing reading. Very, very painful reading.
Mm-hmm.
But let's take another break.
And hard to believe that it's going on in this day and age, isn't it?
Oh, it's going on. Absolute barbarism. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lennon. I'm on with Elaine Woodfield Sharp. Elaine, let me read very briefly what I wrote about the charges against her. None of them included any of what we discussed in the first half of the program. But apparently she was brought into a room or a location to be interviewed by three U.S. Army officers, two FBI agents, two Army interpreters, below I say six or seven of these people. And then I wrote, yet inexplicably, she managed to assault three of them, get one of their rifles, open fire at close range, hit no one, and only she was severely wounded. And then you commented on that yourself and basically said about the same thing. And she was very frail. She weighs 110 pounds, or did then, extremely weak, and yet she managed to overpower six people and get their weapons. I mean, the absurdity, I mean, that's bad fiction, Elaine.
Yeah, it does certainly sound like that, Stephen. And I think it's also important for your listeners to know that Der Spiegel published an article just a few weeks ago regarding Afia's case, and they interviewed somebody in Afghanistan who was a witness who said that Afia never went for the gun. She never picked the gun up. So, you know, there are many facts, so-called facts, that need to be, refuted in this case. And, I think, obviously, you are in a minority of Americans and your listeners also, in that you presume Afia to be innocent. That is, of course, the constitutional standard. The media presumes her to be guilty and convicts her of that in the United States. However, in Europe, the media, in the European press theater, if you will, the reporters are telling a different story. They're going out and they're getting facts. They're going to Afghanistan. They're talking to people there, and they're getting information that refutes the story that is being propagated in the United States. And I think that is a very important step to take, is to get to the bottom of what happened. And that isn't just a matter of parroting what the government spokespersons, who don't even have the guts to be named, by the way. It's not just a matter of parroting that. It's a matter of actually going out and doing some gumshoe work itself. And when it's, for me, the definition of evil, I just want to follow up on something we were talking about earlier, about the universal struggle and the spiritual struggle. The definition of evil for me in the world system is when human beings become fungible units and are traded and killed and abused and used for political purposes. And in my view, this is how I see the case of Afia Siddiqui. I happen to live very close to Salem, Massachusetts, and we all know what happened there in 1692. 19 women, men and women and a dog, were hung for witchcraft. And in those, if you read the transcripts of the witchcraft trials, which I have, the nine actions of individuals, took on malignant and nefarious meanings. The wrong facial expression, the wrong move. Somebody got a cold, and they accused the witch, the alleged witch, of inflicting this illness on them. A bird landed on the windowsill, and it was the witch's familiar that had turned up to torture the victim. So benign actions take on malignant meanings, and I'll give you an example of that in Afia Siddiqui's case. This mother, already of two children, wanted to go home from Boston in the spring of 2002 so that she could give birth to her third child with her mother. Her mother, Ismet Siddiqui, was in Karachi, Pakistan. So she traveled back to Pakistan to have her baby. Of course, the U.S. government wants to put, a negative light on that she went back to Pakistan, to plan acts of terrorism against the United States. It was a simple matter of wanting to go home to have her baby with her mother. It is so important, I think, to, and what you're doing is important, I believe, it's so important to question the media. I am a former newspaper reporter myself, and I graduated from the University of Michigan with my degree in journalism. And when I graduated in the 1980s, it was still the 1980. It was still the role of the newspaper reporter to question the government. What I see, one of the problems with the war on terror, is that the media is failing to ask the right questions. They're merely taking what the government hands them. And they're not doing their job. They're really, the fourth estate is really just an extension now of the first, second, and third estate. It isn't an independent, it isn't an independent investigative arm that keeps government honest. It actually can perpetuate government's lies.
It's the biggest problem I know, Zakiya, because people need information to make sense of the world. And when the information they get is distortion, misinformation, outright lies, then how can they know what the truth is? Mm-hmm. We're lucky because we have the Internet today, and people can go online, and they can get information. They can listen to programs like this that are absolutely impossible through the major media. This program would be impossible to be run on the major media. They wouldn't give me 10 seconds. No. And if they made a mistake, they would cut me right off the air, or they would yell me down. And, of course, the producer who invited me to come on would probably be fired for bringing somebody as outrageous as me on their airwaves. Right. It really is a terrible situation.
Well, you know, and this going back to Afia, linking this now back to Afia's case, Afia Siddiqui, as a poster child for Al-Qaeda, as a poster child for the changing face of Al-Qaeda, you know, as a poster child for terrorism, is really a creation of the establishment media. She is not. The Afia that we see in the media isn't the real Afia Siddiqui. And this is like, you know, will the real Afia Siddiqui stand up? You know, more to the truth is that she, and we see this coming out in Pakistan, and we see it in the Asian theater, we see it in the European theater, you know, and I'm talking about press enclaves, if you will, or viewpoints. You know, we see Afia Siddiqui being painted more realistically as a woman who is caught up or ensnared in the politics of the day, but also as a woman who is a real human being, not just this. And if you met her, you know, she's just a small, frail woman, 90 pounds, maybe 100 pounds now, but very small and frail. And it's important for people to start, you know, understanding who she is as a real person. But every time you try to do that in the establishment media, although I do see some shifting going on, you know, some negative story comes out, some leak by the FBI, an unnamed spokesperson for the FBI. Why is it that government, that we pay for, you know, doesn't identify itself in the form of the individual speaker? You know, what sort of a democracy is this? But we do see this. And every time we try to correct, you know, the negative image of Afia Siddiqui by putting out the facts, we get this, you know, backlash. You know, those people who are releasing these leaks as unnamed anonymous sources close to the case, you know, they really ought to be disciplined. A government spokesperson should identify themselves. This is a free democracy. Why is it that the FBI and the CIA, or people who claim to be associated with these agencies, don't identify themselves? Who are these silent, anonymous accusers? And yet, you know, and so we have this dichotomy between what Afia is charged with in the complaint, which is, you know, trying attempted murder of U.S. personnel with an assault rifle. We have that picture, plus, you know, contrasted against the you know, the picture of her as a terrorist. She's not charged with that, but she's charged with it in the media. The media convicts her, and this is where it's a lot like, this is where we get a lot of parallels to the Salem witch trials and
absolutely.
The McCarthy era.
Elaine, what the charges that were made against Afia tell me was that they really had absolutely no evidence for all of the media concocted reports about the stuff that I read at the top of the program. They
right.
just had nothing to prove those charges. So they had to come up with something else, and they came up with these absurd charges that she overwhelmed six men trained not to be overwhelmed, FBI, U.S. Army. How could a 90-pound woman outwit and overwhelm these people, get hold of their weapon, open fire, hit nobody? I mean, the whole story is so absurd, and yet
well,
they put it together.
I'm sorry, Steve. I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm sorry. I just wanted to jump in, if I may,
sure.
And add to what you just said. You know, what's unfathomable for me, and anybody who served in the military will understand this, is why would the warrant officer go into the room and put down his assault rifle? This is contrary to every fiber of basic training in the Army. You never put your assault rifle down. In basic training, you are taught to keep your assault rifle on you at all times. You even are made to sleep with it in your sleeping bag. You may not put your assault rifle down, and yet, according to the story, and I'm not saying it's true or not. I wait for the day in court when this is proved or not. But according to the story, the government's own affidavit and the complaint, this warrant officer, contrary to all basic training, goes into a room, puts his assault rifle down by a curtain, that's dividing the room, doesn't know what's behind the curtain, by the way, puts the assault rifle down, abandons his rifle. It's that, to me, was the most incongruous thing I've ever read. I couldn't believe that a person of the caliber of training of a warrant officer would go into a room and put down the assault rifle. You never put your assault rifle down.
Elaine, as a lawyer, maybe you can't say it, but for me as a writer, I can say it. The charges were absolute lies. They never put any rifle down. She never got her hands on any rifle. She never fired on anybody. And the whole story was absolutely concocted and bogus. But I want to bring up another topic as well. From what you know of her physical and emotional state right now, how can you describe her condition? As I understand it, it's pretty horrific.
Well, I think it's important to understand that according to Afia's story, which she has, you know, shared with the Pakistani delegation in October, she was rendered and in detention for, you know, 5 years. And during that period, her children were used in various forms of emotional torture, and they were used against her. You know, I mean, you can only put yourself in her shoes and imagine what you would feel like. You know, my understanding is that right after there was a habeas corpus petition filed on her behalf in June of 2008, and Pervez Musharraf was the main respondent to that, and he was ordered by the Pakistani High Court to turn over either Afia Siddiqui herself or information about her whereabouts. And suddenly, she is discovered in Afghanistan. Your readers can infer from that what they want to infer. I know what I infer from it. I'm suspicious about the circumstances of her alleged discovery. I'm suspicious about the circumstances as to how Afia Siddiqui ended up with bullets in her abdomen, with part of her intestines removed in radical surgery. I am suspicious, of course, because I'm taught and I learned to question in the old school of journalism. And also, I'm a lawyer and I understand that there's a presumption of innocence. But imagine that you're, you know, a person like Afia, you're small, you're relatively defenseless physically. You don't have a lot going for you in a crowd if they go after you. And all of a sudden, you're shot in the abdomen. You're med-flighted. You go through major surgery in U.S. custody. You're then flown to the United States and charged with crimes. The media is smearing you all over the place. You haven't seen your family for years. You don't know about the safety of your children. You're worried sick about your children. You're facing life imprisonment. You know, it's not hard to put yourself in her shoes and imagine how you would feel. It's tough. It's tough. It's hard. As to her psychiatric forensic diagnosis, I think that has to be left, to the treating physicians who actually have, you know, daily access to her. Providing, of course, that those physicians are appropriately culturally educated in her culture and her language, so that they understand if she's speaking metaphorically, that's what she's saying, vis-a-vis a concrete statement of what she sees or doesn't see. I think the psychiatric forensic diagnosis has to be left to the forensic professionals. Naturally, if they testify at some point, they will be subject to the crucible of cross-examination as to their opinions. But as to the, you know, the general
Let me explain, Elaine. She's at the U.S. Army Carswell, Fort Worth, Texas, a medical facility, not for medical treatment that she needs badly, but for psychiatric care. Have you any idea?
It's not actually for psychiatric care at this point. It's really more for pretrial evaluation.
They're doing nothing for her medically or psychologically.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
They're doing absolutely nothing for her, physically, mentally, emotionally, anything.
Well, I don't know what specific treatment she might be getting at this point. She is in Carswell and has been there for a few months now.
And they won't give you access to her?
Well, I could have access to her, but, you know, getting from Massachusetts to Carswell is expensive.
Indeed.
You know, she has access to her brother, who's very devoted to her, a very good man, who goes to see her as often as he's able to. And so she's getting regular, she's getting a regular family visit, which I'm sure is a balm to her soul. But, you know, it's a tough situation to be in. And it wouldn't be hard to imagine that one might not want to participate in a system, a justice system, where it seems stacked against you. Inside the courtroom, we presume her to be innocent, but outside the courtroom, she's already convicted in the press. Well, where do the jurors come from? They don't come from inside the courtroom. They come from outside the courtroom.
Indeed so. We have another break coming up, and this hour has flown by. We have one short segment left, Elaine. Let's take a break and come back and finish up the story. I'm certainly not done talking about Afia. I'll continue to do it. It's a very important issue for me. It should be for all of us. We'll be right back. To the News Hour. I'm on with Elaine Whitfield Shop. Elaine, I have a favorite tagline at the end of the articles. Not all of them, but it's my favorite. It's my favorite ending tagline when I write about political prisoners. And in the case of Afia, using the name of the person that I'm writing about, because of the situation we live in today, an age of a so-called war on terror, just outrageous stuff that goes on. And in the case of Afia, my last words about her in my message to my readers, to everyone, is that we're all Afia Siddiqui's. We're all vulnerable. They might decide to come after us for whatever reason they want, maybe especially like me or even you, Elaine, because you defend the aggrieved, and I write about them, and I have radio programs about them. And they may decide they don't want me around anymore, and decide they want to trump up charges against me. So mm-hmm. I feel very vulnerable, and I certainly don't feel safe in this country.
Anyone who speaks out is vulnerable. Anyone who speaks out is vulnerable.
Absolutely.
I also have a favorite tagline that I think I've started using since Afia's quote-unquote discovery, and that is that, and this is from an old African proverb, and it is that until the lion tells his own story, the tale of the hunt will always glorify the hunter. We haven't heard all of Afia Siddiqui's story yet, and so the tale of this hunt does glorify, at least in the establishment media, the hunter, that is the powers that be. But as time passes and history unfolds in a more truthful manner, you know, I hope that Afia Siddiqui at least is saved and spared, you know, the fate that the government would have her suffer. And I hope that all of your listeners will continue to follow and support her case. And I thank you very much.
Oh, Elaine, I hope you will keep me posted on developments.
Absolutely.
As they happen. Have you any idea when the case will be brought to trial?
Well, the next hearing is February the 23rd, if I'm not mistaken. And that is basically a status conference to determine where, you know, things are headed in the case. There's more psychiatric evaluations to be performed, you know, those do take some time. So the judge has given basically a 60-day extension from the December 17th hearing. So the February 23rd hearing will perhaps give us some more information.
So it could be a good while before this is resolved.
It could indeed. I mean, you know, a trial takes a long time to come to. You know, trying a case is a lengthy process. Pre-trial is, you know, quite involved. It involves, you know, reviewing the government discovery, for example, doing your own investigation, for example, interviewing your client. You know, determining who the government's witnesses are going to be, going through reams and reams of documents. You have to actually do a lot of preparation for trial. a lot of people seem to think, and I've seen this on various websites, that, you know, the trial isn't, you know, the next hearing people think will be the trial. It's not. These are pretrial proceedings or pretrial hearings. It could be a long time before it goes to trial. And, of course, there is a rule of speedy trial. But either side, well, the defendant can waive that. And sometimes extensions sought by the government can be excluded from the speedy trial rule.
Elaine, that music means that we're at the end of the hour and they will cut us right off. When everything is concluded, will you come back on and discuss the case again?
Yes, I'd be very happy to do that.
Oh, Elaine, I would appreciate that very much. I want to follow
thank
this.
Thank you from Althea and her family. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Elaine, for coming on. This is a big story, and people need to know about it.
Thank you, Fearing.
Thank you so much, Elaine.
And Happy New Year to your listeners and readers.
Thank you. Thank
Bye-bye.
You, Elaine.
Bye-bye.